Hey guys, this is Ishai Breslauer and welcome to the CRE Shark Eye Show, where we discuss commercial real estate. On Mondays, we dive deep into an asset class, and on Thursdays, we go into some inspirational stories for the weekend. Can't wait to start. Let's go. Hey guys, before we continue, I would like to introduce you to the 7-Day CRE Challenge, which will introduce you to commercial real estate and will show you that anyone can do this. Also, I have the free cheat sheet for commercial real estate with the 6 best secrets for commercial real estate. You can download it free. Just click below or above, wherever it is, and get it. Let's continue. Hi, guys. How are you? This is Ishai Breslauer, your host of the CRE Shark Eye Show. I hope you guys are doing fantastic today because we have a very special guest that actually deals with the hottest topic today in the market, and that is industrial. And I want to welcome, without further ado, someone who has vast, vast experience in this whole world. Matt Seltzer, it's a pleasure to have you. Thank you for being on the show.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Pleasure. So tell us, let's start, you know, with your story. How do you start? You know, you don't seem like you started yesterday. So tell us a little bit about how it all began.
Sure. So I graduated the University of Delaware in 1981, and that was a recession year, and there was not many jobs available. And my dad encouraged me to go into commercial real estate in New York City, and he helped me a lot to get established. And so in September of 1981, my father arranged for me to meet a legendary real estate person in New York City. He passed away. His name is John G. Molino, and he was vice president of real estate for Lowe's Corporation. He handled all the real estate for Lorillard Tobacco, Lowe's Hotels, Lowe's Corporation, CNA Insurance. He was really a legendary New York City and countrywide real estate executive.
Sounds like a great mentor.
Yeah, he was a wonderful person, and he was a good friend of my dad. And so my dad asked him to help me, and he did. And so he got me my first job at a company called Huberth and Huberth. And they were a very, very long-term, old-line real estate firm in New York City. They represented the Hearst family in all their properties.
Tell me something, what capacity you started there?
The way you go into the real estate industry is you become a cold call door knocker. You're a fuller brush salesman for office space in New York City. And that's what I did. We would go into a building, go to the top floor of the building, write down the name of the tenant, ask the secretary for the president's name, get the phone number, ask to see the president right away, get thrown out. But you would make a list, a canvassing report, and you get it all typed up.
Thrown at the door, come back at, you know, through the window.
Any way you could. So that was my indoctrination into New York City real estate. And I did pretty good, you know. And I did that from 81 to 97. Eventually, before I got to Cushman & Wakefield, I was with a company called the Helmsley Noyes Company. And that was owned by Harry Helmsley. It was formerly the Charles F. Noyes Company. And they were really developers and brokers. And so I became a leasing agent for some of the Helmsley properties. I was at 233 Broadway, the Woolworth Building, and I was at 22 Cortland Street, which is where Century 21 department stores are. You probably know that, right?
Yeah.
Century 21?
Yeah.
Okay. So, and also 111 Fulton Street. And that went on till, you know, 1997, when I decided after having a family that I wanted to work locally in New Jersey. And I basically got a job with Cushman & Wakefield in their East Rutherford office.
Tell me something before you continue. What was the first asset class that you dealt with? The first thing.
In New York City?
Yeah.
Office space.
Office space.
That's it. The only thing I really did in New York City was office leasing. I represented tenants most of the time, but towards the end, I had those three leasing agencies. And Yeah, no, New York City is office space. That's what it is, really.
Right. You know? Right.
Stores. I never really did stores.
Retail a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. No, I never really did stores.
Right. Okay, so that's very exciting. And okay, so that was the beginning. And once you got to New Jersey, I'm assuming that was a little different, right? It was like also.
Oh, New Jersey is much different.
Yeah, yeah, of course. Different type of, from the high rise, as we call it, to the different types.
To the mid rise. Yeah. To the mid rise. Yes. New York, we would always do a 10-year deal, sometimes a 15-year deal. In New Jersey, very rarely did you do a 10-year deal. You did 3-year deals, 5-year deals. It was a big surprise. They had an office market. It was overbuilt in most markets. And, you know, I tried to do deals there. I also stumbled into the industrial area, which was at that time overbuilt too. And I kind of liked the industrial business and, you know, kind of did both office and industrial, and eventually the office business, you know, completely faded and industrial became on fire in New Jersey.
So we're going to dive deep into the industrial part. But before we do that, since you have so much experience in the office space business, so I want to ask you this. What is the difference between then in the office and now? What is the huge difference?
In New Jersey? Nothing really. I don't think New Jersey's been as affected as New York City with COVID. People, you know, New Jersey just is not that as dependent on office space as New York City is. So New Jersey's got a little more diversified inventory of commercial property. You have tremendous warehouses, you have tremendous malls, you have some office buildings, you have a lot of medical buildings that are specialty buildings. And of course, New Jersey's used to having a 20% vacancy factor most of the time. Matter of fact, the only market that I can remember that was ever, you know, a landlord's market was Jersey City. At one point, a few years back, Jersey City had close to a zero vacancy rate. And that's because New York City was on fire and it was really a fifth borough of New York City. But if you got outside of Jersey City, there was always a 18 to 25% vacancy rate in office space, in my opinion.
Right. And tell me something. So you got interested in the whole industrial space. What was the first time where you recall where you said, hey, I got to get into this thing?
I was with a couple of guys from C&W and they were making a tremendous amount of money in the industrial business. It seemed to be growing and it seemed to be, you know, not as competitive as the office space world was. So I just, you know, started tracking it and, you know, canvassing it. And the office world had gone from privately owned buildings to REITs. So the REITs were mostly self-administered. So there were no more leasing agencies. The REITs were handling their own property. So all you could get the tenant side sometimes, but you never really were able to get a really good agency because they didn't want to give them out. Eventually that changed again too, but they sort of, you know, kind of encouraged me to go towards the industrial area because there were still mom and pops that owned large buildings that wanted to hire brokers. And it was, you know, it was a little bit easier to do business. And that's the truth.
So, okay, that's a good answer. So tell me something. What type of industrial in the beginning you have started with?
Oh, it was always warehouse distribution. Sometimes a lot of printers. Sometimes we were able to put a data center in the beginning in an industrial building. The data centers were great when you could get them and put them in industrial buildings. It was fantastic, you know, to take a data center out of New York City and maybe it was in a $35 or $40 a square foot building and put them in Secaucus in an $8 triple net building, you know.
And that is going back to which year, give and take?
I would say, you know, maybe as far back as, you know, 2005, the data center business kind of started.
Yeah, that's far enough.
Know? Yeah.
Interesting. So, okay, so industrial went through huge change, okay?
Yeah.
And let's talk about, and since you are in industrial, and I'm assuming that you're also dealing with warehousing, is that?
Absolutely. I made a 500,000 foot deal a number of years ago in Brooks, Kentucky, with Konica Minolta. The deal started at $3.30 a square foot, and 12 years later they renewed at $4.70 a square foot. That building today is a $10 building.
Wow.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Tell me something. Because you were in the middle of it. If you started in 2005, you were right in the middle of everything. And I'll tell you exactly what I'm talking about. We all know what happened to the e-commerce revolution and everything where Amazon came in and just changed everything for all of us. What, from your perspective, from your dealing, from your business on the day-to-day basis, where did you see, what do you see? Tell us a little bit about that, because you were in it.
First of all, when you're in the field, you don't know, but you bump into a startup called Wayfair. And, they're not Amazon, but they're Wayfair, and they sell a lot of stuff. And they were originally like a 30,000 foot tenant in right by the GW Bridge on Tunnelly Avenue. Oh, geez, I forget the name of the town. It's escaping me right now, but they started at 30,000, and a year later they were 90,000, and a year later they were 250,000, and then Amazon emerges. And so Amazon is now showing up, and they take 1 million feet, and you think they're done, and then the next year they take another 1 million feet, and the next year they take another 1 million feet, and then UPS needs to take 1 million feet, and FedEx needs to take 1 million feet, and DHL needs to take 1 million feet, and then all these 3PLs that, I can't even give you their names, they're taking 300,000 feet or 150,000 feet and then 500,000 feet. And suddenly a market that, the industrial market was kind of funny. Pretty much it was exit 8A or Raritan Center. And every time Raritan Center kind of got full and leased, and let's go back to say 2005 again, Raritan Center was renting for like $5 a foot. Exit 8A was renting for $250 a foot. In 2005, you could have made a lease in an Exit 8A new warehouse building for like $2.50 a foot. It's incredible. But because of, Amazon and all of e-commerce, those buildings are now $10 bucks a foot, $8 to $10 a foot. And Raritan Center is $10 to $12 a square foot, which is just incredible.
So tell me something. Right. So when you've started, getting into it, and once again, Amazon came in, and all those e-commerce and all those platforms, all those startups, all those companies came in, and you started seeing the boom, as you said, from $250 to the $10, et cetera, et cetera. But even when it didn't get to the $10 foot, right? Even when you felt that, hey, something is really happening here. Did it shift something within, like, in terms of your day-to-day things? Meaning in terms of, okay, I want to move into more warehousing and I want to go and get more of those type of properties.
Yeah, no. I saw that the market was becoming much more active and that supply and demand were becoming more balanced. Used to be supply would get out of hand all the time. As soon as you reached a certain $5 a square foot in Raritan Center, somebody would build more and they would build a 1 million foot building, it would crater the market. But it became, more balanced supply and demand. And there was a lot of people in the .com kind of businesses of e-commerce that wanted warehouse space.
Can you walk us through a little bit about the differences between types of industrial? Meaning warehousing, storage, et cetera, et cetera.
So there's a bunch of different classes. Today, Amazon builds 40 or 45 foot clear ceiling height buildings. Those are brand new and they're loaded with material handling systems, much different from the warehouses that are, say, in Raritan Center that were from the old days. Those buildings in Raritan Center are 22 foot clear ceilings. And some of them are 28 foot clear ceilings, and they were great until e-commerce really exploded. Amazon just leased a building in Raritan Center. I think it's 360,000 feet. I'm guessing they paid $12 a foot, and they're just parking trucks there. They're not even, they're just parking their vans inside a big building, as opposed to, you know, loading it with material handling and product and robots.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it's really amazing.
Tell me something. Can you talk a little bit about storage? Also, that went through a lot, meaning that type of a
When you say class. Storage, you mean like the mini storage place that a family would rent to throw stuff in?
Most.
Yeah, I never did any of that business. That business was done by entrepreneurs that were developers, and they built a product and then they leased it to families that wanted to store furniture and stuff like that. Those buildings really showed up in like a retail spot that had a problem with parking. You know what I mean? They really didn't show up in an industrial center. The industrial locations are like the intersection of the New Jersey Turnpike and 287. Very, very major roads that are, you know, limited access highways. That's the type of warehouse distribution I'm talking about. But some of those properties originally had manufacturers in the buildings, you know, and those buildings that were the 22-foot clear buildings with manufacturers, they turned in when the manufacturing jobs left New Jersey, they turned into data centers. On the New Jersey Turnpike, Exit 10, not in Raritan Center, is a huge building that used to be a New York. First it was Carrier Air Conditioners. Then Carrier got out of the building. The New York Times took it over. Then the New York Times got out of the building and it became a data center. And it was like, you know, a 22 or 28 foot clear building. And, you know, they were great for data centers because they had tremendous power to run the air conditioning and the environmental equipment. And they also had lots of space outside that neighbors didn't mind having generators put in. You know what I mean?
Yes. Tell me something. This is very, very interesting because once everything started to change and the demand started being so high, I can tell you for myself, from my perspective, that we, you know, at a certain point, we started looking at all kind of retail centers that were failing. And we started looking at them as a futuristic, you know, a futuristic in order to go and turn those retail centers into industrial. We had the thought, conversion, what we call today, okay? So we looked at all those. Were you involved in that kind of stuff, or did you see?
I'm really not. Apparently, Amazon is making a deal with Simon Properties, and the old JCPenney stores will become like the last mile hub for some of their deliveries, maybe. That's what I've been hearing bantered about. I would say old shopping centers are easier to convert to call centers versus warehouses. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Lots of parking or medical office space and call centers, things like that. That's my guess, but that's just a guess.
Right. Tell me something. What do you see? What would you tell a young person coming in today? Because, you know, when you came into the whole industrial scene, it was, as you said, because of you saw friends that are making money, et cetera, et cetera. Today, being in industrial, whether you're a broker or a developer or just you do acquisitions and you just go in any event, doesn't matter what you do, it became so exciting to get into it.
Well, the deals are big. Yeah, the deals were big.
So how, yeah.
The commissions, you know, New Jersey's a 5% commission state. That's pretty big.
That's pretty big.
So, yeah.
So what would you recommend to a young person who's coming into
industrial?
Hey, I want to get into industrial.
I would tell a young person that if they really want to make a lot of money, they should learn the contracting business. They should go to maybe the NYU school and get, you know, the degree in plan reading and learn how to actually be a contractor, okay? And then get into the industrial business. And I think the contractors that built these buildings made a lot more than the real estate brokers.
How come?
Because it costs a lot more to build a building than, you know, if you're building a building for $60 a square foot and you're making 20%, you know. And maybe it's even $80 a square foot.
Right, because it costs a lot more than the land. That's the nature So you're saying that,
and it's a good skill to have.
Very interesting.
I mean, if you go into it, I'm, there's such opportunities, in my opinion, in the construction business for kids that are knowledgeable and have an education in it. If you go into it and you don't actually like working for a general contractor, you go to work for, you know, an industrial real estate broker, you're going to be able to add value because you're in construction knowledge.
That's so interesting that you say that. And I actually never thought about it. And I'll tell you why. Because coming, I dealt mostly with the residential office, some retail, but mostly when it comes to those type of asset classes and not industrial, the land value is a lot more than actual construction. Okay. A lot more. In certain places, it's not like that, right? But the developer is making a lot more money than the contractor, most cases.
On fees. Really,
what?
But development fees.
Right, development fees. Yeah. But not only development fees, the whole margin of actually yes. getting into the deal and coming out of the deal, mm-hmm. the whole thing, where when you look at the whole IRR situation or whatever, it looks very attractive, right? And it's the first time actually that I hear that in industrial, a person should actually start from the contracting side because the contractor is making a lot more. He's making
a lot of money, and it's a good education. You know, when I was a young broker and I came out of college, I didn't know anything about real estate. I was in New York City. What did I know about elevators? What did I know about the cost of drywall and how much it costs to take down offices and put offices up? I knew nothing about air conditioning, whether it was a central air conditioner or a package air cooled. I knew nothing about it. You know, if you go through that NYU certificate in construction management, You're going to know a lot.
That's a good tip. That's a very good tip. It really depends. I don't have much experience with industrial and you do. And that's a great tip. Meaning in the other asset classes, I don't think that's the necessity. I don't think.
But I'll tell you what, a construction education, if the markets change, you can go to work for a mall guy. You can go to work for an apartment guy. You know the construction business. You know how to read a set of drawings and price a job. You have a value that out of recession, you know?
100%. I agree with that. Tell me a little bit about New Jersey, where you're from.
It's a big industrial market. It's a gateway market, Port of Newark. There's way over 1 billion square feet of industrial space in New Jersey now.
That's amazing. And what about...
That's a lot of that.
You just said before, you said Kentucky, I think? You said that you...
I'm sorry, what? Oh, yeah, I did a deal in Brooks, Kentucky a number of years ago, right outside the UPS Logistics Center. And they wanted to be there because it was a parts... it was Konica Minolta, and it was where they were flying parts in from Japan and distributing them to throughout the rest of the country. Yeah.
It's very interesting. Is there a place to be an industrial broker or to deal with industrial in general, whether you are a developer or whatever you are.
The gateway markets, New Jersey, California, Inland Empire, all the port cities, all the big ports on the East Coast or the West Coast have giant industrial markets surrounding them that are profitable.
And you are focused on New Jersey, right?
I lived in New Jersey, yeah. Yeah,
but let me ask you this. Would you tell someone who would like to be cross country, call it, you know, in different states and to be operating in different type of areas, is that recommended or is this a business that requires?
I had two national accounts at one point that took me into all the different markets. I represented Konica Minolta for 3 or 4 years across the country in all their asset classes, whether it was office, flex, or industrial space. And I represented the old Reader's Digest Corporation across the country. And that's why I was in other markets. So if you can get yourself what's called a tenant rep assignment for a large user, you're going to learn all the different markets.
Right. If they're nationals, then right. you're actually all around. And that yeah. is good. Right. Tenant representation. I'm asking that because in retail, for example, when someone does retail, for the most part, people are, they're all over. It's not like residential when they do multifamily. They focus on one area for the most part because they are expertise. They can't just go all over the place. They have to be focused.
It's an SMA. It's, you know, they focus on one particular SMA unless Unless they happen to represent Starbucks, Starbucks will give you a big territory. A lot of the retailers will give you a big territory to cover for them.
100%. So
but
you
those stores are only 2,000 square feet, now.
Yeah.
So that it's hard to make a lot. Even if you're paying $50 a foot, they're doing 10-year deals with the right to cancel. You're only getting paid on the uncancelable term.
You know, that leads me to another question. You just said Starbucks shrunk like sort of to 2,000 square feet, right?
Even smaller.
Even smaller. And the reason is because this whole, how do you call it? I forgot the name, that there's a terminology. Walmart got into business with, how do you call that thing that they're like kitchens away from where they are? I forgot the term.
Oh, commissary?
Ghost kitchens.
Central commissaries. Yeah. I don't know that. I know that Starbucks uses a central commissary now for sure, but the stores got smaller because they wanted drive-throughs. They want drive-throughs, and that's why the stores got smaller. And they were smart because that's what their customers want outside of New York City and other urban areas.
But what I wanted to ask you is, did it come through you? Meaning something, did you have that awareness? Nothing came through?
I had
a ghost kitchen in an industrial area?
Every once in a while, I would run into somebody that wanted that. And I would always do any deal that would come my way. I did a Solar City warehouse a few years back. I mean, anything that came my way is what I would do. So I've run into commercial commissary kitchens, and they don't need high ceilings and things like that. So you could take them to a crappy old building. The lower the ceilings, the cheaper the product.
Unbelievable. What is the value of a ceiling when it comes to industrial?
Because you're racking material. You want to rack goods, as high as you possibly can. That's why.
And how would
at
you
least
say,
for a warehouser?
Right. And how would you say the calculation goes when it comes to high ceilings versus low ceilings? Because
the rent differential, the higher ceiling buildings are more expensive than the lower ceiling buildings. And it's all supply and demand. The prices go up for every asset class as the higher end space gets tight. First your Class A space rents, then prices go up on your Class B space that rents, then Class C space gets redeveloped.
Interesting. Once I asked a guy who did a lot of retail in the Delaware area, and I've asked him, he was so big and so involved, and I asked him why he's not getting, at the time industrial came in, and I asked him, why don't you get into industrial? And his answer, and I want to hear your take on that. I asked that before. I want to hear your take on that. I asked him, why don't you get into this whole industrial thing? And he answered me the following. He said, listen, if I do a build-to-suit for an Amazon-type company, right, it's going to be a very specific building with certain type of ceiling, with certain type of, because of structure. If they leave, I'm going to get stuck with this big elephant, white elephant, as we call it, that no one will be able to use. What is your take on that?
First of all, you make a 20-year lease, and you can sell that lease like a bond anytime, prior to the last 5 years. So I don't know. I think you have to do long, long-term leases with renewal options and things like that. And then you're selling a bond afterwards.
I got it. And what is, from what you do now, today,
I don't do that. I don't sell buildings.
You don't what?
I don't sell buildings. I just do leasing.
No, yeah. No, I'm saying, but the leases that you do, a normal term that you go for usually?
Okay, so in a tight market, first of all, the term that I go for is whatever the customer that I'm working for wants. And I always generally represent the tenant, but the markets are dictating longer and longer terms. The tighter they are, the more the landlords can get longer terms. And that's what's going on right now.
And today, what's the?
Today's 10-year terms in New Jersey and longer.
How would you say real estate did to your career? What would you tell me?
It was a great career. I mean, look, if you're a self-starter and you want to be your own boss, it's really a wonderful career. So it's a wonderful career, but you could almost say that about any business that you get into. unless you, you know, except for working for a public company. Like if you bought a coffee shop and you were your own boss, you would feel that way too. But very little capital required. So when you buy the coffee shop, you had to pay for it. You're investing in yourself. And I made a very nice living, and I still do.
All right. Thank God. Sounds very good. So I can tell you this. It sounds like, first of all, you're in the middle of the exciting stuff, that is, everything's going on around you. And that is amazing, because everything that I hear is industrial. Everybody talks industrial. Everybody.
The only thing going on. It's the only thing going on.
Everybody talks warehousing. And so many, let me ask you this. Is it a, did you all of a sudden notice a clutter of people coming in? Meaning, because at the time that you got in, it was less competition. Are you seeing right now, like the room is getting, hey, you know, but meaning you're a leader now, but I'm asking that in general.
The family operators are selling out to pension funds, and there are, you know, publicly traded Prologis and other publicly traded REITs that are industrial REITs. They're buying out all the small operators, and they're aggregating in all the markets. So that's what's going on.
And tell me,
big is getting bigger. Big is getting bigger.
Big is getting bigger in terms of lending. What's going on in the market there?
Oh, I think the lenders love to lend on industrial now.
Can you compare it now to what used to be, let's say, 10 years ago?
I really wasn't a sales broker, so I don't really know what was going on there. But I do know 10 years ago, it was harder to get a mortgage on an industrial building because the rents were lower. And now that the rents have come up and the triple net, the banks are, you know, very eager to loan money on good quality leases.
And you already said that as a leasing broker, meaning you had different type of experiences in the past because there was less required. All of a sudden, there's more required because owning that type of a property is becoming a beautiful thing. And therefore,
oh, it's a beautiful thing. If you can buy some industrial real estate at the right price, it's a beautiful thing.
It sounds great and it sounds exciting. And industrial, I'm going to have a lot of shows talking about industrial with different people, and that is one of the great things. And I really appreciate you for being here on the show.
Oh, it was really nice to meet you, and thank you for encouraging me.
Thank you, Matt, for being with us. And you guys that are watching the show, I hope you learned something about industrial. We're going to talk a lot about industrial. It's going to be really exciting in the next couple of weeks. I want to tell you goodbye, and I'll see you the next time. Hey guys, thanks for joining me in this CRE Shark Eye show. I hope you enjoyed it. And go subscribe, download, do whatever you guys need to do. And I'll see you in the next episode. Take care of yourselves.